Millions of people are aging, but they don't know how to age well so they can properly enjoy their later years. And that's why Marcus Riley will tell us about the longevity hacks for aging well. And what's so special about Marcus is he is the founder of the Booming Aging Agency, author of Booming, a Life-Changing Philosophy on Aging Well, and host of the Booming Podcast. And he's a global champion of positive aging, and he offers 25 years of transformative experience in health and aging. And he's the founder of the Booming Movement and is dedicated to helping individuals and organizations thrive by embracing the concepts of successful aging into later life. Now, I think that a lot of people are focused on longevity, and I think a more important focus is not just on living longer, but living longer and feeling great, feeling like you are forever young. And that's what I would love to learn all about. So tell us about how can someone feel and look younger and age like fine wine?
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.
Hi, Lily. I think there's a number of aspects which people can consider in terms of how they really grab hold of that opportunity to thrive in later life and really seize that opportunity through our increased longevity. In terms of how we feel, there's certainly a number of factors that go into that. And we talk about four key pillars of that aging journey, one being how we are physically, secondly, how we are emotionally or psychologically, and then social and environmental factors are the other two key pillars. And if we think about those aspects of our life, we want all those different elements to be aligned to what's important to us in terms of our priorities and our passions. And if we can do that, then we can start to build our plan in terms of how we want to be living through our later stages of life. And I think coming back to your question, perhaps not so much matters to all of us how we look, it's more how we feel. And there's definitely factors that influence that. And I often draw the analogy to the weather. And if we look at our weather app on our phone, we'll see that the temperature today is 25 degrees or whatever it might be. But if we scroll down on that app, you'll see what the feels like weather is. And that will be different because there'll be factors like humidity or wind or what have you. And it's the same approach to our age. The calendar might say that our age is 65 because that's our chronological age. But due to a range of factors, we might actually feel like we're 45 or we might feel like we're 85, depending on how we're feeling physically, psychologically, and emotionally, etc.
Thank you. Now, I do think it's important how you look as well, because I don't want to look like a lizard, because I haven't moisturized and used SPF, which I don't. I guess I don't use SPF. So I think the looking aspect is important as well as the feeling, because, like if I'm looking at myself and I look like a lizard, then at some point I'm not going to feel well emotionally either, and I may not leave the house because I'm not confident.
Sure.
And
I guess just to clarify that, to clarify, Lily, what I meant there, important, it's how we feel and how we want to look is important, not what someone else might view in terms of how we're looking. So that was what I meant in terms of it's not important how we look as in the eyes of others. It's how we feel about ourselves. And that really aligns to the philosophy around successful aging, which I have a really strong belief that successful aging is possible for all people because it's self-defined. And it's not for me to tell you what your successful aging should look like or for the next person. It's what we define for ourselves. And that includes how we want to feel, how we want to look, because it's personal. I define for myself how I want to be aging.
Thank you. I think one of the most important aspects that I'm thinking about, as I'm 44 right now, and I'm thinking that what I see as a really important aspect of aging is to be mobile, to be pain-free, and to look like I am forever young, And
Sure.
I'm wondering about, in terms of for people that want to be mobile, like forever. What are some things to put in place to make sure that you are mobile yet pain-free? Because I think one of the key aspects of people that kind of tend to kind of go downhill really fast tends to be like they hurt their knee or they hurt their, I don't know, their arm, they fall down the stairs, whatever, and then their entire life literally in 1 year could be done just because they're unable to leave the house. And because of that, they put on weight. They are not able to socialize. The whole thing is literally messed up and nothing is working anymore. So tell us about the blueprint for someone to be mobile and pain-free and feeling great, like with their body in the later ages.
Sure. Lily, there's a combination of the physiological and the psychological. So taking the latter first, how we feel mentally and our level of resilience, our positivity is really going to be conducive to our better physical health and well-being. So it's important we are considering that as well and how we're nurturing our psychological well-being. And as I said, having that positive daily outlook, which leads us open to new things, to being active, to connecting, and then that will support our physical well-being. So in terms of our physical well-being, obviously we want to keep moving. That's priority number one. I think we all know now that if we stop using something, we lose it. So we need to keep our body moving in everyday living, as well as specific exercise activity. And then we want to be focusing on our strength as well. So it's maintaining our muscle strength, increasing our muscle mass, and combining that with movement like walking or some sort of other aerobic activity that we're able to do, because that combination will be really good for our health in terms of our cardiovascular health, but also in terms of our mobility, as you said, reducing the risk of falls or frailty. But also the combination of that physiological and psychological will help us overcome any setbacks that we might endure. So obviously there are things that could happen that are outside of our control. It could be a sudden injury or an accident, which does impact on our ability to be moving around and be mobile. If we have that positive mindset, that underpinning strength, then we're going to be able to overcome those sort of setbacks and return to the sort of lifestyle we want. And in our new book, Your Aging Advantage, we talk about the ability to flicker. And flicker is really the concept of being able to return to your preferred stage of aging, your preferred way of living after a particular setback that may have occurred. And we all have that ability to flicker. And it is very much aligned to that combination of doing the right things for our physical health combined with the right things around our psychological and emotional well-being.
Thank you. Tell me about what someone should put in place to reduce the likelihood of frailty and bones kind of collapsing. I'm not sure if that's the right word. Because I had some people on the podcast that were talking about how, for example, if you don't do weights, for example, that will somehow reduce the bones' ability to kind of recover, and it will kind of can lead to kind of bone porosity. But maybe you can tell us more about that, because I think if your bones are really frail, and especially I would say for women that have been pregnant, I think they're more likely to get osteoporosis, which makes their bones kind of more likely to basically be frail, and because of that, at some point they don't leave the house, and because of that, they become immobile.
Yeah, that's a great question, Lily. And there's a couple of aspects in response to that. One is, picking up your last point there, is understanding where we are in terms of our health and what factors have been at play. So that could relate to post-pregnancy or other phases of our life, which we need to be mindful of. It could be considering what type of work we've been doing and how that might impact on our physical state. And then on the back of that, identifying what are the key sort of factors which could be identifying risks for us, whether it's around our bone density or frailty, whether it's about things that could be a risk to our mobility or our respiratory system or whatever it might be. So when we have knowledge about those areas, then we can take the right sort of action to mitigate those risks and to be ensuring we're pursuing positive interventions as far as our specific health aspects are concerned. And when we talk about health of our bones and obviously our muscles that go along with that, that strength training is really important. And I think one of the misnomers about as we go through midlife and beyond is that we're just going to decline physically. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can intervene positively with the right sort of approach to strength training, obviously including diet and nutrition and our other exercise and activity, which will really support our ongoing health and well-being. And specifically to your question, help us retain that strength of bone, strength of muscle, so that we can be physically upright, we can be physically moving regularly, and avoiding that decline that can happen if we do nothing, But that decline doesn't have to be inevitable for all of us. We can intervene positively and stop that decline and actually improve our health. And there's been some really good research come out even recently around the ability for us to improve physically and cognitively as we do grow older from midlife and beyond. So we need to break down those stereotypes and those misnomers about, well, we're getting older, so we're going to have to decline physically. We don't have to be doing that at all.
Thank you. Tell us about the kinds of supplements or what kind of food should someone consider putting into their diet to optimize their mental strength and also physical strength? Because I think a lot of people that are over a certain age, they tend to get like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and neurodegenerative conditions. And what can someone do to kind of make sure that they retain their ability to think straight and their bodily functions? What can someone do?
Yeah, there's, again, a number of aspects to thinking about that. Certainly, diet and nutrition is absolutely key. And we need to very much understand what we need individually in terms of our diet and nutrition. There may be certain aspects in our makeup which mean we need to stay away from certain foods or products, or we need particular food and products, and certainly protein as we get older and as we're trying to maintain our physical strength and the strength of our muscles and bones, that's really important. We need a good variety of our food that is going to give us the right sort of nutrients and energy. It's going to be good for our blood flow. All those sorts of really important aspects need to be addressed through what we're eating. And I think looking at food in two ways. One is looking at it in terms of being fuel, so giving us the energy, etc., but also looking at our meals as an experience to enjoy. And I think in our busy society today, we can often rush through meals, and that is detrimental to our health in terms of compromising our ability to digest food, but it's also sacrificing that pleasurable experience that a meal should be, whether it's with family or friends, or whether it's at home, or whether it's out and about. We really benefit from that enjoyable meal experience, and we digest our food better, and that's going to be better for our metabolic health, etc. The other thing connected to that, sorry, Louie, I was just going to add quickly that question, around our cognitive health that you included. Sleep is obviously really important there too. So we need that combination of the right foods, the right exercise and activity, and the right levels of sleep. All those ingredients coming together is going to help us feel our best, look our best, and be performing at our best.
Thank you. Tell us about the impact of gut health and having parasites on someone's ability to age faster or slower.
Yeah, it can have a really big impact on a couple of different levels. One, it can be exposing us to a much greater risk of illness and disease. And depending on, our biological makeup, we could be prone to certain things more so than others. So if we do have that poor gut health, then we're going to be much more susceptible to disease and illness, which can be obviously quite serious, and it sometimes can be quite sudden as well. And then more broadly, it's that compromised ability to perform well in terms of our metabolic health and what that means around digesting the food we intake, making sure that's going to the right places across our body. It's supporting our blood flow, it's supporting our muscle growth, etc. So there's a number of really important aspects that flow on from good gut health. I think, again, we've got access to better and better information now around gut health, the links to our broader health in terms of issues from our food digestion, how our blood's circulating, all those sort of things are so connected. And we've got, as I said, much better access to information now generally, but also we can access better information to us individually and really tailor our planning to suit our personal circumstances, which includes what we should be eating. If we are thinking of taking supplements, what are the right supplements for me, not just what I'm hearing, in a general nature. So it's really getting specific in the things we're choosing to eat, the things we're choosing to consume, and what's going to be most conducive to our optimal health.
Thank you. Tell us about mitochondrial health and cellular health. What can someone do to optimize the way the cells function so that their entire body feels and looks better?
Well, again, I think it's really coming down to that personal assessment and understanding your key markers and what sort of intelligence you can be gleaning from your physician or from a health professional that you might be working with to, again, understand who you are in terms of your makeup, the factors that have been impacting in terms of your life up into the current position. And then I think, really importantly, looking forward as to, well, where do I want to be in terms of my health and well-being? What are things that I need to be aware of and trying to avoid, or what are the things I want to be embracing, and then tailoring things accordingly to that? So obviously through different technologies, different data points that are available now, we can really enhance that personal understanding of our own makeup, whether that's, you know, cell related, whether it's in terms of other genetic factors. We can be arming ourselves with this really good knowledge, both about ourselves and then about options to engage with that are really aligned to what we need personally.
Thank you. I think a lot of older people tend to suffer from heart attacks and heart conditions. What can someone do to reduce the likelihood of dying from a heart attack and kind of increasing their longevity?
Yeah, Lily, that's a really good question. And I think it's one that people are considering more and more, because obviously as we get to, you know, midlife and beyond, we are seeing friends or loved ones experiencing those sort of health circumstances and health episodes. So there's a couple of particular things. One, certainly understanding our family history. You know, is there a evidence of heart disease or other heart-related conditions in our direct family and being aware of that? And then understanding what's going to be promoting our good cardiovascular health. So obviously in the last couple of decades, we've come a long way in terms of understanding the risks of smoking, understanding the risks of certain foods that aren't good for us and aren't good in particular for our heart and our ability to move blood around our body and having the right oxygen levels and all those sorts of aspects. So it's really getting the right information about those key factors. Diet and exercise, I think that aerobic activity is so important in terms of our cardiovascular health. So how are we able to participate or pursue those activities regularly so that we're doing the right physical things to support that good heart health? And then what are the right foods and other things we're consuming to support that good health? And I think we've seen that if we are susceptible to that sort of condition, or we have even experienced that sort of cardiovascular or heart-related issue, we can move past that. And I think, again, one of the perhaps misconceptions is that once we've had a condition or we've experienced an illness, then we can't move past that in terms of our optimal health. Well, in fact, we can now, because we have access to so much information and we can access the right sort of things to support our ongoing health. So if we have already had an issue with our heart or other sort of chronic condition, even let's be arming ourselves with the right information to be able to move past those sort of circumstances and live really healthily. And I think one of the key things to your last couple of questions around our food and what we can be doing to ensure good health is moderation is obviously a key word. And I think that's really important when we think about different diets. So we might be considering different approaches to lifestyle. Moderation in what we're eating, what we're doing is really important. I think we often find the healthiest people are those who are not doing anything in too much of a extreme way. It's really having that balance and moderation, enjoying the things that you like in moderation, doing the right things in moderation as well, so you're not overbalancing yourself in any particular direction.
Thank you. What is the best way for people to eliminate toxins, some of them addictive, from their life and their body? And what I mean by that is, like, a lot of people know smoking is, you know, smoking kills, right? But these still smoke. A lot of people know drugs kill, and a lot of people know that sugar, you know, has a detrimental impact. And even me, like, I know sugar is bad for me. And look at me, like, I'm obese, you know? And I mean, I'm addicted to coffee and to cake, you know? And I mean, millions of people know how harmful so many toxins are for their life, but they find it really hard to get rid of them because they are addictive and they provide some sort of pleasure that they just can't do without. So what can someone do to eliminate some toxins, some of them that they are familiar are detrimental for them, and some of them they don't even know that they are?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, it's a great challenge for all of us, really, I think, Lily, because everyone has certain things that they particularly like, which we know maybe not that good for us, and it's difficult to be disciplined around some of those things. And I think one of the key mantras there, as we're trying to move past something that either we're addicted to or we know that isn't good for us, is sort of the mantra of progress, not perfection. I think sometimes people are really harsh on themselves when, if I might be trying to not drink alcohol or not eat sugar for a period, and we might have an instance where we do have those things, and then we give away the whole mission and we feel like we've failed. Whereas I think if we are a bit kinder to ourselves, in the sense of, well, we might have that bit of sugar or, you know, a drink every now and then, that's okay. Let's keep moving forward. And I think positivity is absolutely crucial in that regard, so that we are being kind to ourselves. And I think a positive mindset allows us to develop that resilience and that discipline to overcome those urgings or addictions to things that we know aren't that good for us. I think the other really important element is to be looking forward and understanding the benefits we can realize if we do make the right choices over a period of time. So planning is really important there, so that we can be visualizing even the benefits we can get, whether it's how we feel physically, whether it's the capacity and energy we're going to have to do things we want to be doing, whether it's different activities that we perhaps don't have the energy for because we're tired from drinking, or whether we're tired from sugar hits or whatever it might be. That is a really good motivator for people, I think, in terms of having that sense of, well, what I can be doing if I make the right choices along the way. I think it's important that those motivations are personal. They can't be external. That's not going to get us through those challenging periods. So I think it's being kind to ourselves, being positive, and having a plan. They're the best ways, I think, for us to try and overcome those challenges of things that we know aren't too good for us, but we do like. As I said before, moderation is okay as well. I think we can allow ourselves some of those pleasurable items, as long as we're not overdoing it and being detrimental to our health.
Thank you. What are some quantum health tips that you have for people that want to make like a magic transformation? And I mean, before you say that, you know, no magic actually exists, I mean, I have experienced some magical things. And so, for example, bioresonance devices, you know, like there's this little device that I use sometimes, and it has like hundreds of different conditions, and you basically just press on one of them that upsets you right now, like migraine or gut health, or I don't know, there's a lot of different things. And you may not notice it immediately, but after a few months, you just kind of start to look better. Everyone's wondering, what kind of treatment did you have? Because you look like you're glowing, you know? And I haven't tried red light therapy, for example, but I would like to try that. And also like hyperbaric chamber therapy, I haven't tried that. But I'm basically open to having like a lot of different therapies that would enable me to look and feel younger. So tell us about your hacks that you have. Like,
sure. The something that has taken me a long time to embrace has really been the commitment to good sleep. I grew up in a family of night owls, and I often would be someone who wouldn't prioritize sleep. And I've certainly seen, and I'm not great at it yet, but I've seen the benefits of when you do it well and have good sleep and good routines around sleeping. I think the start of the day is really crucial, Lily, to how we feel and how we are able to perform each day and feel good each day. I think it's important to design that routine or habits that suit you. But things like getting exposed to sunlight at the start of the day and allowing that energy to to be felt as you are illuminated by being in direct sunlight for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of a morning before you really do anything else, I've found is hugely beneficial. And then hydrating at the start of the day as well. I think those two things combined really give you a kickstart for the day. And I think they help you look well because you've got out and exposed to the sun before it's too hot. You've hydrated, which obviously helps your skin and helps your energy levels mentally, because I think often at the start of the day we can be dehydrated from sleeping and the night before. If we're not really addressing that quickly at the start of the day, then we don't capture that maximum energy level at all. So those are the two things that I would really promote: that early exposure to daylight at the start of the day combined with good hydration sets you up really well, I think.
Thank you. Have you used any other like devices or gadgets for optimizing your health or for longevity?
I've been using a smartwatch just around my physical activity, particularly when I'm exercising. I'm not too strict around monitoring heart levels and those sorts of things, but it's more about knowing how much I've done. For example, if I'm going for a run or if I'm at the gym, having that information that's arming me as far as how much I've exerted myself, what sort of levels I've gone to today versus, you know, previous days or what have you. And then I can look at that over the course of a week or a month and see how I was tracking, because for me that's a good barometer of my overall well-being. If I've had the energy to do good exercise, I know I'm in a good space. Whereas if I haven't been able to exercise well, I know that either my schedule's too busy, or I haven't slept well, or I haven't been eating well because I haven't performed in terms of those exercises. You mentioned before around infrared saunas and those sorts of things. One I do like is the steam room as opposed to saunas. I find the steam room is really cleansing, both from the skin point of view, but also from your respiratory system, the ability to really breathe slowly and deeply and feel quite cleansed after those sorts of sessions are quite beneficial.
Thank you. I've been depressed for, let's say, about 7 years, and then I'm not depressed now, but you know, things can come and go depending on what happens in my life. And during that time, I mean, I'm a very sporty person. So, I mean, I walk a lot. Like, I can walk 10 kilometers a day, and that would be nothing to me. But what I found is that while I was depressed, like, I wasn't dancing as much. I wasn't, like, swimming as much. I mean, I was swimming and I was dancing, but I wasn't dancing as much. So, like, my general mood was just kind of low. And during that time, I put on, like, gradually, over a few years, I put on like 30 kilos, you know, and now I'm like 83 kilos and I should really be like 58. I'm not sure if you know kilos, but the whole idea is,
yes.
I'm wondering about what can someone do to maintain themselves in high spirits over the longer term? Because I think you could be like, you could look really great, you know, but you could feel that you're not so great. And then because of that, maybe you don't go out as much, you don't socialize. Because of that, you become lonely. And I think some people die of loneliness, like, because they just, you know, we're meant to be social. But as you're kind of growing older, you know, some people haven't taken care of themselves as much. And then all of a sudden you're lonely. And when you're lonely, you can be living 90 years or 100 years, but you could feel like, oh my God, when is this going to end? You know? So I'm wondering, what can someone do to kind of elevate their spirit so they don't end up living alone when they're older?
Yeah, that's a huge question, Lily. And one I think is really important as we consider our longevity. And to me, there's two aspects to that question. One is our connection, which you touched on, and secondly, our sense of purpose. So if we look at the negative to those, if we are feeling disconnected, if we're not socially engaged with family or friends or colleagues or whoever it might be in our community, then we are going to start to feel isolated, which leads to loneliness. And again, we're learning more and more about how serious that can be in terms of its negative impact on our health and well-being. So as you rightly pointed out, we are social creatures. We need to have that connection with others. I will point out, though, that that is different for different people. So for some people, it's being part of a big group, it's being out and about. But for others, what might be their preference and adequate for them in terms of fostering that social connection? Is there one-to-one connection with the neighbor or a friend or a loved one? And then the other side of it is our sense of purpose. So having a sense of purpose, research has shown, is the number one factor in a person and their health and well-being. So it's critically important for all of us. Again, it's different in terms of what we're going to derive our sense of purpose from. So for some people, it's the role they play in their family, or it could be the role they play in their local community. For others, it's their career or their business which fuels that sense of purpose. But irrespective of what that source is for us, we must have it. It's hugely important. And again, one of the misconceptions is that as we grow older, we become of less worth and we should participate less. So people have this, unfortunately, this expectation that, well, we need to withdraw and stop doing things, stop contributing, stop participating as we get to a certain age. So we need to, again, break down that stereotype and importantly, engaging in different areas so that we are maintaining that sense of purpose as we grow older. If we can do those two things, be connected and have that sense of purpose, then we will have good mental well-being, we'll have a good, much more positive outlook, and we'll be engaged. We'll be engaged socially, we'll be engaged cognitively, we'll be much healthier physically and mentally. So as I said at the start, really huge question and something we all need to be considering and planning for as we do move through different phases of our life, whether it's transitioning to, you know, out of the workforce or to a different job or a change in family circumstances. We need to make sure we're fueling that sense of purpose and staying socially connected.
Thank you. I think for me, one thing that's very important is actually having a lot of fun. And I think as you grow older, it needs to be your priority. At least that's what I think. Because if you can't have fun, then like, what's the point, you know? And I think one needs to develop the ability to have fun in the moment. And I mean, like in the little things, to like really see and appreciate, like, oh my God, I have water, I have legs, I have arms, and look at how beautiful I am. And look, you know, like, whatever age I am, and look, you know, there's a part of you that is always going to be beautiful no matter what. It could be your eyes, or it could be your hair, or it could be like, I don't know, beautiful hands, or I don't know, something. And I think it's so important to have fun. I'm wondering about, are there any practices or routines that you recommend for people to do so they can feel and experience more fun in their lives?
Yeah, totally agree with you, Lily, about the importance of the fun. And there's so many different ways in which we can be doing that and pursuing that. I think the first thing is really investing time in ourselves and contemplating what are the things we're passionate about, what are the things we really enjoy. And it could be music, it could be exercise, it could be hanging out with friends or seeing the grandkids or whatever it might be. Let's identify what those passions and priorities are, and then commit to spending time doing those things. That's when we can really unlock that sense of enjoyment, that sense of fun. And I think being open then to different opportunities for that connection and engagement, because we know as we pursue those sorts of things, we do inevitably have those experiences of joy and fun and laughter. And whether that's with one other person, whether it's with a big group, it doesn't matter. But it's really aligning our time and our activities to the things that we're really passionate about, because that will give us the best sense of joy and fun.
Thank you. Can you give us some tips on how not to become a lizard in the older age? What I mean by that is, how do you basically maintain your good looks in the later years? Because I find, for example, you can have like a really nice body, but then if you have like a tummy, you know, like if you have like a big protruding tummy, you can like literally just ruin the entire aspect. And then when you're looking in the mirror, you're just like, instead of really appreciating the beauty of you, you're seeing that, you know? And again, it's like, you know, with wrinkles, I mean, it's kind of almost inevitable, but there's a lot of things that I think can be done with Korean skincare and whatever to kind of delay a little bit, you know, that. So I'm wondering, are there any tips you have for people who want to stay rejuvenated and looking not like a lizard?
I think it's coming back to some of the things we've talked about, Lily, that good hydration, good sleep, taking care of ourselves is both internally is going to help our external appearance and how we feel physically. So all those things are really important. Some people will use different products, whether it's, you know, skin products or supplements. If they're right for you and it's what you want to do, that's fine. Some people, you know, rightly very comfortable with all the wrinkles and gray hair or no hair or whatever it might be. Others may not be. And if they want to be doing something to change that, that's totally fine. That's their decision and their choice. And as I said before, your own view of successful aging is what's most important. You define it for yourself. But certainly those practical things around good hydration, good sleep, the right sort of foods are going to give us the best skin, give us the best sort of physical feeling. The other thing I'll really add to that is our flexibility and strength as we get older. To be upright and mobile helps us feel good, helps us look good, and helps us be healthy. So the activities that are going to support that in terms of stretching, in terms of some strength training, in terms of exercise, those sort of things are really important for how we feel, how we look, and our ability to maintain that physical wellness as we get older.
Thank you. When I came to London from Romania 20 something years ago, I was really lonely. I mean, I didn't know anybody. And one thing that really helped me integrate was actually going to a dance course, okay, which is called Jive.
Sure.
And there was a place called Siroc, and it's like a type of Jive. And then the really cool thing about that is that you actually dance with 100 men in one night. And then you don't have to really know them. You just like literally they're in front of you. You dance with a person for like 30 seconds and then next one comes and so on. So it's a very fun way to connect with people, to socialize and to move. And then if you want to, you can actually meet people. And it's a really great way to kind of get rid of loneliness. And I think that sometimes when you don't have an activity that you want to do, you can actually become the creator of that activity. So, for example, I've organized a lot of like salsa dance events. And if I was to organize again events, it would probably be events where I would be some sort of DJ, because I mean, I like music and I like dance as well. And I mean, I don't ever see myself like retiring. And I think that's an important aspect of it as well, because I think when you're thinking about, okay, I'm in retirement, it's almost like your mind, I think, almost kind of like goes to sleep and gradually you're degenerating. But I think a lot of people that are looking great and feeling great in the older ages, they tend to like not actually retire. They tend to have something to do even in the later years. They start a new business. They are organizing poker nights. I don't know. They're organizing dance nights. I think it's I'm seeing myself even at 90 years old, like I'm imagining that I'm going to be doing like poker nights, dance nights, you know, events. I don't ever see myself going like, okay, I'm done now. Like I never think of that being a possibility of me like being, I don't know, somewhere watching TV. I don't think it will ever happen. And I think that is also very important. Would you agree there?
100%, Lily. And I can evidence that agreement by in the new book, which is all about redefining the stages of aging from young adult through to end of life. We don't talk about retirement. It's a construct that was developed, as we know, from the late 1800s in Germany, and it was 65 was set as a retirement age when life expectancy was obviously decades less than what it is now. And it's become an arbitrary deadline, if you like, for people to be reducing their participation, to stop doing things. So again, as I mentioned before, it's really a personal choice in terms of how you want to be living and what you want to be doing. And for some people, they do want to stop work and they want to transition to a different sort of lifestyle, which is wonderful for them. Equally, it's wonderful for others who want to be working in whatever capacity or staying involved with their business or volunteering or whatever roles they want to pursue. Again, it's great because that's their own choice. And one of the key concepts we talk about in the book is aging on pace. And by that, we mean that people live at the tempo they want to, the lifestyle they want to be pursuing. And for some, that's going to be a busier schedule where they're constantly doing things and potentially working for as long as they possibly can. For others, it's dropping gears a little bit. It's a different sort of pace, different sort of activities, different sort of priorities. But the important thing is, again, it's a personal plan. It's a personal choice. And picking up what you outlined in terms of your preferred lifestyle, that makes a lot of sense because it's what you're passionate about. It's what your priorities and preferences are. So you should be pursuing that in line with those passions and priorities. And the again, the stereotype that we've all been we've all grown up with is, well, you get to a particular age, then you should stop work because you're too old. You should be doing less in the community because you're too old. Whereas really, as we know, a particular age number doesn't mean much at all because everybody's so different and we're going to be going through different stages of aging at different times and for different durations. So totally agree with your philosophy around pursuing things that you like doing, that you're passionate about, and they're going to help you stay connected and avoid isolation.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
You can go to the website marcusreilly.co.co, and you can also go to the website youragingadvantage.com to get your copy of the new book.
Thank you.
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.